Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to a new episode of Future Bites. Today, great energy already in the room. We've been chatting for a while. My guest and somewhat of a friend, because we met here when I arrived in New York years ago, is Margaret Purvis, Margherita. She's the CEO of the New York City Food Bank. I would like to make a very short introduction, and then we'll start talking a little bit about numbers and why you're here. Because this is a show about the future, a show about how change is going to impact your kitchen area, your living area, your eating habits. But I come from the country, and I realize, thankfully, for me, I think, in my head, at an early age, that future works well when you think about the present. Future is made now. Future starts with action, starts with commitment, and starts with intention, and then you shape it. So, yes, we do talk about the future of food, but the future of food becomes hinges on our behavior right now. And on the other side, I consider myself lucky. I grew up in an environment where food poverty and food scarcity was not an issue. Florence and the surrounding areas has always been a place where if there was any lack of food for, let's say, the old age or people in need, we would go to the church. So it was a community-driven effort of always being aware of your surroundings. And cut to, I meet my wife, I fall in love, and I am living in Los Angeles, where all of a sudden the good of life is highlighted in Beverly Hills and Hollywood and West Hollywood, and the bed is just hiding on Skid Row, away from the eyes of the people that come to visit the city, away from the eyes of the people that live in the city, because that is the financial district where people are actually starting to move to live now. So I was involved with the Midnight Mission there, and before I moved to New York, I reached out to the Midnight Mission. I'm like, I'm going to New York. Who do I call?
Yeah.
And here we are. So I have been proud and very, very happy to be a part of your entertainment council. We always support the work through the New York City Food and Wine Festival to a few appearances here and there. And I did realize the enormous impact that you do have on not only on the financial aspect, on the providing meal, but raising the awareness and talking to people. And it helped me because I was able to expose my kids to the work that you do. And to me, it's incredibly important. I grew up in a house where if at the end of dinner there was some food on my plate, my mom would say, it's 25 cents. I paid for that. Yeah. It's like, you eat it. You served yourself, now you eat it.
Your mom's like my mom.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not from
we're
the
cousins.
South. Yeah.
We're cousins. Didn't know it, but we're cousins. Yeah.
So let me, before we get into the nitty-gritty and, you know, what you're doing and what we can do, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, how you get into that, you know, what was your background and the call? You need to have some sort of special calling to embrace a job like this.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime.
And I did not know that that's how we met you. Mm. We just felt that, you know, God just dropped you from the sky. And we're so glad you're a partner.
I hope that's what my wife thinks, too.
I didn't know the connection.
Well, my name is Gabriel, so yeah, I'm hiding my wings.
This one, I can't. I can't. Yeah.
Don't make me blush. I forgot makeup today. Oh, my God.
Oh, we had plenty back there. But, you know, I tell you, I am first and foremost a Southern girl. And
so the good heart is there to begin with.
Well, hello. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, I grew up in the church, and my granny was very instrumental in my raising. That's the way it's done in the South, you know. The grandmother is absolutely the matriarch. And my grandmother took the title Missionary Baptist to heart. And she would always say, you know, baby, Christianity ain't in that book. It's in your feet and your hands and your heart. It's what you show to your neighbor. It's how you take care of people. It's not you just saying hallelujah on Sunday morning.
Yeah, thank you.
And so I honestly, Gabrielle, I thought everybody was growing up dying thousands of eggs for the community every Easter. I thought everybody cooked food. She was the cook. The preacher always brought everybody to our house. But she would make food, and we'd take it to the state hospital. And she would always say, some of these people, she's like, there's nothing wrong with them. She's like, there's just nobody that loves them. They don't have a good family. Like, nobody's caring for them. So our job was to go and put food together, and we were expected as her grandkids to talk to folks. And so to me, this is just a natural extension of how I grew up.
This is you.
Yeah. And it's like, yes, I'm from Mississippi, and I know New Yorkers probably have a lot of ideas about Mississippi, but I never missed a meal. Right. We had plenty of food. We grew food. We went to the grocery store. Our food was at my grandfather's house, and my great-grandmother had property. Like,
was
everybody.
There food poverty around you?
Not that I knew of.
Right.
I never missed a meal. I never watched anybody in my family miss a meal. But we cooked everything.
Right, absolutely.
We cooked everything. Meals, it was a moment for our family. You know, my grandmother, her girlfriends, they were mostly domestics. Mm-hmm. But I can remember, Gabrielle, one of my favorite moments. My mother, she'd always say, I'm having an event for the ladies. And they'd all get dressed up, and my job was to take their bags and take their little... I had no idea that all these women were basically housekeepers. But my grandmother would make everything so nice, and flowers and everything. And it just, it was fellowship.
Yeah.
It was fellowship. And we were not rich people. But
yeah,
we
but
had enough to share.
Richness, as you said, is in the mind, is in the heart, is in your actions, is not in...
Absolutely.
You're rich when you're able to give, not when you have.
And that's
the richness.
That's my grandmother. She yeah. said, you must give. And she says, or you'll never feel poor. She said, you'll never feel poor as long as you're giving.
Right.
She said, anytime God gives you enough to give, he just told you, you're blessed.
Nobody's able to understand the gift that you have if you're not sharing it with people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you become secluded.
And the other thing is, you can't put anything in a closed fist.
Yeah.
You know, the road to getting really is paved in giving. You know, many people think that giving, whether it's your service, you know, service, your time, your wealth, your voice... They think it's about the other person, and it really isn't. It yeah. is about you. You know, service is like a vacation for the soul. Yeah. When you give, it really pays you yeah. back first.
And we're not necessarily talking about giving money.
Yeah.
This is just about giving yourself to yeah. a cause or embracing
whatever.
A cause or being available for
yes.
somebody. That's the biggest gift that you can give.
Yes, and I think that what I'm finding now, especially in our city, giving... really, it's probably one of the better and only bridges between the haves and the have-nots.
Well, especially these days.
Absolutely.
You need to show who you are with actions.
Well, and your kids, the New York that we mostly came to when we were younger, the diversity was not just something you saw on news. It was something that you felt, something that you knew. Like, there were just more of us together.
Right.
New York today... is divided based on economics. And so your children can grow up, and not because you're a bad person or anybody's a bad person, but people aren't growing up together in a way that's required.
Do you think because the city is getting bigger? Do you think it's just because of the politics? Do you think it's just this
expense.
Moment in time?
Well, I think expense is really the main driver.
Yeah.
I think expense is the main driver. And the reality is that poverty is concentrated among people who look a certain way. And doesn't mean the people who don't look that way aren't struggling too.
Absolutely.
But the likelihood of the mix, it's becoming more and more rare.
Yeah.
And that to me is scary. And so we're always trying to look at not just how do we speak about our mission. What we're finding now is our new challenge is how do we more aggressively share our mission? How do we make sure that New Yorkers understand that ending hunger in our city is a solution with them at the center of it?
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that's just a holiday thing. It has to be something that really, that they see themselves in.
I completely agree. Well, one of the things that, for instance, I try to explain to my kids when we walk in areas and you see, you know, the occasional homeless that is asking for money or just somebody that is in need that is on the sidewalk. They're able to relate that with poverty. And my point to them is like, look, you know, this is a side of poverty that is here because it's their choice. Please do realize that tonight there will be a kid that is sleeping somewhere, that is going to bed without a meal. And here in New York, we are where? 1 in 4 kids? Yeah. That goes to bed hungry at yeah. night.
And in some communities, it's even higher.
Yeah.
In some communities.
And that's something that yeah. I never felt.
Yeah.
Like, I felt hunger once in my life. I was camping.
Yeah.
And I had nothing. And it was a storm, and I spent 3 days without eating. Mm. And eventually, I went through a garbage yeah. to look for food. It's tough. Yeah. It is a place where you really consider a lot about yourself, about the world around you, about the blessings that you have by not having to worry in general about these things.
And really, like, for the kids who are growing up in poverty, I think that my biggest worry, and I think the thing that probably drives me the most, is making sure you don't ever want for a child who does not have the background that we have to believe that poverty and lack is some kind of birthright.
Right.
That they are simply not entitled to anything different from that. That
they
this
will
is their
seek
lot
the
in
opportunity.
Life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They will take for granted that the opportunity is
absolutely.
Not there for them.
So I think that when we look at our work at Food Bank, we just look at it with a totally different lens now. That it's not so much just about the food that comes off the truck. Obviously that's always going to be most
absolutely.
Important. But we now look at where the trucks go and what are the characteristics of those communities?
Mm-hmm.
How ready and able are those communities to serve their neighbors? And what we found is that, hey, the poorest people in New York City now are also in the poorest communities because it's now dense.
Yeah.
And they're served by the poorest charities. And that our best opportunity to really see change is how do we focus on building the capacity and opportunities and access to those charities
absolutely.
In those communities? How do we build that bridge, whether it is about having more volunteers and New Yorkers who live outside of that community to go there and have that exposure, to be able to highlight those charities so that they can meet new friends?
Absolutely.
Because what we find is, like, what I loved about what you were saying about how, yeah, you know, if we needed help, we go to the church. Well, guess what? That's still happening.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the churches are broke too
yeah.
because they only serve poor parishioners. Yeah.
I also think that is a sign of the times. We are evolving towards a more, I don't want to say religious-less, but more, and not even atheist, but religion is now becoming to me, at least, I am more of an agnostic kind of. You know, my father was a Jew, my mother is a Catholic. So to me, it is about behavior. It is not about the kind of God.
Yeah.
You are who you are, and you deserve the respect. Doesn't matter where you come from, who you are, what kind of church you go to. Here,
it's in your feet and hands and heart.
Yes, exactly. here, in this new era, it feels that we are getting a little divided.
Yeah.
You know, the ability of creating a common sense, a common feeling that can be shared in between religions or in between races is getting a little cornered.
Yeah.
And that makes the things a little bit more difficult because we are not able, you know, we don't consider the neighbor always a neighbor.
Yeah.
And
that's you're so right.
Odd.
Well, and that's really why I never even allow my team to call anyone we serve a client or those people or the hungry. We call them New Yorkers and we call them neighbors. Because what I do know is New Yorkers are passionate about New York.
Absolutely.
And New Yorkers are, we don't like anybody talking about New Yorkers. So I make sure that we try to create the remembrance that we are one team. Mm-hmm. We are one city. And in this time where our country is so split and is in so much pain, I love being able to remind New Yorkers, ho, 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 we have always been leaders.
Yes.
Our roots are deep in this city.
Yeah.
It is based on diversity.
Yeah.
Even when we're separate, not really. You know what I mean? And to make sure we understand that at this time, America needs New York to be the example.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, that's not just something I'm saying. Like, I believe that in my core. I just left Australia. I was there for a conference, the Agile conference. I know, that's my so-called Australian accent is not very good. But while I was there, I was surprised at how, not really surprised, I was a little uncomfortable with how many people talked about what they perceive to be the cruelty of America, because I was there at the start of everybody learning about what's happening at our borders to the children. And they kept coming out like with pity. With pity, we're so sorry. Oh, God, poor America. Why are they being this way? Why are they so cruel? And I got a little like, hold on, wait a minute. And it made me so proud to just be able to talk about, well, wait a minute, from my desk and from my perspective in my city, here are all the awesome things that I see New Yorkers doing for each other every single day. And I sat there just like, okay, you know what? We got to be louder. Because sometimes when you're having a lot of garbage coming in, you got to remember that you got to have a mirror that reflects who you are really.
Oh, absolutely.
Who you are really. And for groups like mine, we really do. Yes, yes, we are dealing with such visible reflections of pain in our city. But we also are swimming in compassion every single day.
Agreed.
Like I'm going to be calling on you this year more too, because I learned something when I was in Australia. Oh, yeah, my friend. What I learned was we use celebrities and chefs like you. We very easy to ask you for your celebrity. But you know what we never ask you for?
What?
We never ask you to help us with our operations.
Well, I came to the food bank a couple of times.
Oh, but I know you do. Not that. No, 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 no. Goes deeper. Meaning, we spend money on food because, you know, we have the food from the government. We have the food that's donated. And then there's like, we go to buy stuff. Like, oh, okay, well, we need extra things. But we've never come to you to say, Gabrielle, if I have just this and this and this, what would you make?
Oh, yeah.
You got the difference?
I'll give you an example. About 3 years ago, we were already in New York. There was a campaign that was run and probably associated with you as well, that was to try to live under the poverty line for a week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the poverty line when it comes to food is $1.50 per person in the family. We're a family of four. And our budget became $6 a day. Breakfast, lunch and dinner, with kids going to school with a lunchbox. So no cash handed. I told my daughter, I said, we are doing an experiment. Keep $10 in your backpack. You're going to school. And if you're getting a headache or passing out, please go eat something. To me, it was somewhat of a fun exercise because I do have the ability of baking bread with 50 cents or making a dish of pasta that feeds six people with $3-4. The problem is that I am lucky because I do have that knowledge, and it's also a luxury to spend 4 hours making bread.
Yeah.
Because people that do not have that kind of money, most likely is the single mother has three jobs, that is out of the house, that has to spend, she has to buy the burger for $1 at the end of the day for her kids.
But my soup kitchen.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's what I am.
Yes.
My soup kitchen could have asked you. And we're going to.
Oh, please. This is how recruiting is done these days.
No, let me tell you guys, you ever just have like that aha moment?
Absolutely.
And I'm watching this stuff and I'm talking to this group, and I watched a man from that charity when I was talking about the, you know, oh, the budget, oh, the food is so expensive. And I, you know, you have a person kind of get a look, and I saw in his face, oh, he just judged me. So I said, you judged me. What are you thinking? And he's like, oh, no, no, no. You know, people always lie. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, I didn't judge. Yeah, you did. It's okay. What were you thinking? Tell the truth. And he's like, why are you buying food? I'm like, duh, because I got all these people I got to feed and da-da-da. And he's like, oh, no, no, I get that. And I said, no, 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 you're still judging. What are you really thinking? He says, why don't you just cook what you have? He's a chef.
Right.
And I said, oh, my dear Lord, I have all of these chefs, and we've never said these are our food resources in our soup kitchen
or
in the soup kitchens
that?
around the city.
Yeah. How do you optimize that?
What do we do?
Absolutely.
Well, it's a game changer.
Since we're talking,
you're about to make a difference, my friend.
Yes. Well, I believe, and that's probably, I believe that we try to make a difference every day as much as possible. Except when I drink a little bit, but I take my time. But no, I really would like to talk a little bit about your operations.
Yes.
If you can give me some numbers, you know, the emotional aspect is the most important.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that as you talk, like you're giving accent with the foot. It's like being in church. It's like, or you could be a singer. It's like, you know, stand up. Like, you know, oh, yes, you could, girl, you could. Give us a little bit of numbers, not just about what can people do to help, yeah, but how you're managing your resources. So you're based out of your main kitchen is in Harlem, right?
Yes. We have a community kitchen and pantry that is in Harlem. The neighborhood where it is actually the most food insecure community in Manhattan.
Okay.
We have a pantry. We have a senior center where seniors show up at 7 a.m. on time all the time. Don't let my people be 3 minutes late. We have a problem. But we love that site. Our main hub that serves the entire city is in Hunts Point in the Bronx. 90,000 square foot warehouse. We move 120 meals every single minute. Yeah, so we start there as well early in the morning, about 6 a.m., sometimes even earlier, of trucks going out. And they're
When we were promoting for the last campaign that we did together, is the $1 still able to provide those 5 meals?
It is still able to provide 5 meals. However, in this year that started July 1, our new goal, last year we did 50, meaning end of June, we did about 59% of all of our food was either produce or protein. Mm-hmm. Our goal this year is for 75% of the food to be produce and protein. Mm-hmm. It's the number one thing that we've been hearing from the poorest neighborhoods that they need the most.
Yeah.
So those things are more expensive,
yeah,
and you need more of it to be able, and the produce, to create that pound. So it may change what the dollar is able to do, but guess what?
Yeah.
It's more power behind the dollar.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you think about it, you know, that is a combination of, you know, the nonprofit work, the donations that you're getting from companies,
yeah,
and the dollar donation that you get from your supporters. So all those three elements combined.
We need all of them.
You know, they're able to generate that.
And the service, because when you have food that's been donated, in order for you to get it ready to be on the street as soon as possible, mm-hmm, you have to have people sign up to volunteer.
Absolutely.
Because it's really way expensive for my staff to try to sort through all of that food. So we are always, every single day, needing volunteers. Now, so the food goes out. There's 1,000 soup kitchens, food pantries, schools, shelters all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are totally hidden to the naked eye. People probably driving by. You have no idea. You just passed five pantries. But they're all over the city.
Are they all connected to you?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're their own 501c3s.
Okay.
But they have to have contracts with us because the food is donated or it's the government, and we have to make sure. We actually monitor all of them to make sure that the food goes where it's supposed to go, that things are safe, that everybody's trained. It's a bear of a task. But they're all over the city. We serve them via tractor trailers. And frozen trucks and other coal trucks. So there's a fleet of about 24 to 25 trucks all over the city on any given day, every day. But we are a non-traditional food bank. So we don't just serve with the food. We also have a whole financial services arm.
Okay.
So we also do people's taxes via volunteers. Yeah, we actually run the country's largest free tax program, second to the military. We produce well over $100 million annually. We've now done well over $1 billion in refunds. And basically, we do that because this is New York City. And poverty, we try to meet it where it is.
Yeah.
And you can't just serve it with food. We have so many people who are the working poor. Like when you're mentioning to your daughter about the homeless make up the smallest percentage, actually, of who we serve. Most of the people we actually serve are families.
Yeah.
And we have to change it up. And people are going to work. And there's lots of credits that they are eligible for. But to even go and get it, to pay for it, they can't afford it.
Yeah. I remember when we moved to New York on the first year, one morning I was making a lunchbox for Julia, my youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. We are at the door, leaving, you know, late, obviously, as always, walking down the block. And she's like, I need to go back home. And I'm like, why? It's like, I forgot something. So, like, it's my little girl. I'm like, okay, let's go back home. Get back home. She runs back into the kitchen, opens the pantry, grabs a couple of energy bars, puts them in her jacket, and she's like, okay, I'm ready. I'm like, I just made you the lunchbox. Like, you got sandwich, you got an apple, you got an energy bar. I don't want you to eat all this stuff. She's like, oh, no, but this is for my friend. She only has candies for lunch when she comes to school.
I knew that's what you're about to say.
And,
I knew it.
But this is the thing. She lived across the street from us. And we are in a hyper-gentrified Park Slope, whitewashed yoga beaches neighborhood.
Yeah.
Excuse the language. So one of the things that stuns me is the fact that it is in front of you. So it is our choice to kind of like turn the eye, or sometimes I do understand there might be some sort of like embarrassment because you are the one.
It's the greatest shame. It's so hard
to voice the need. And that's why, you know, and that's one of the main reasons why we moved, Debbie and I decided to move from Los Angeles to New York, because my kids were being raised in private schools where they were asking us why we didn't have screening rooms at home. And I'm like, really? Really? You know what? No TV for 2 weeks. No, I didn't punish them. But Debbie and I realized that they needed to be in school with the daughter of the butcher, the son of the cop, the single mother, the divorced father. And it's shaping my girls into real New Yorkers, which I am incredibly, incredibly proud. We haven't talked about technology. This is not a technology conversation. I think that this is actually the fuel for anything that we can do to advance. But I can probably close with this. Have you found any help in technologies? Are you guys using any applications? Or are you working with anybody that is plugged into that? Or where would you see...
Well, I will tell you, the technology community is at the top of the list of people we want to work with more.
Yeah.
The reality is that if you are really going to solve poverty, if you are going to improve the processes that serve the poorest people, you really are not going to be able to do it without better partnerships. I think people forget this. Yes, you need the compassionate people, but you need your smartest to be thinking about your poorest.
And, you know, it's interesting because in these days, in this age, everybody's coming out with the next big thing, the next tech invention, the next app. Mm. Everybody's point is always like, well, we need to create things that are actually good for us. They are solving problems, not just creating for the sake of creating or for the sake of just because we can.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and when you think about the poorest neighborhoods, there still are many of our communities that don't have free Wi-Fi.
Right.
That is still happening right now.
Yeah.
It's a game changer. When we go into some of the poorest neighborhoods, we actually have to take our RV because it has its own Wi-Fi on it so that we can go in and help people get on food stamps. We actually now are able to put people on food stamps on the spot in their neighborhood.
That's incredible.
Here's why that's a big deal. A person living in poverty, a mom with kids and an hourly job, she's eligible for help. Here's why she won't get it. Because if she does not show up at work, she risks losing that job.
Exactly.
So when we can take the services to the communities, to the people who need it, I mean, it is a game changer. So we always need more Wi-Fi there. I'm having the darndest time with my warehouse management system. Mm. Like, we have our members.
Well, this is actually, let's turn this into a real call because, you know, the tech world is exciting, but there's a lot of bragging. There's a lot of chest pounding because of the good and all the great things that are being built.
And then they didn't do anything.
So, you know, let's pound the chest a little less and let's figure out how to tackle, you know, a real problem.
Designing
an app for this, I don't even think it would be, because you don't have Wi-Fi, they don't have cell phones, they don't have cell phone contracts. It is about finding solutions that are able to work in a synergy with a community that is disadvantaged to a degree, which is a great challenge for tech, because tech takes for granted Wi-Fi, GPS location, the ability of people of buying the tech.
There you go.
So why don't we use it?
And even when we have a great solution that exists, like, it'll be at one charity or two charities. Like, we wish we had the ability that when we see something that's wonderful, we always talk about seed and scale. If we had a partner that could help us expedite the solutions so that we can quickly take this thing that's working in Harlem and get it to the South Bronx.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. Well, I mean, it's crazy how long it's taking us to be able to just move a solution quickly to many charities who need it right now.
Well, let's use this as a moment for a call to action. I will definitely see you in October for the 25th anniversary or the 10th anniversary of the New York City Food and Wine Festival.
No. It's now 11th now.
No, it's 11th. It's 11th. Then 10 was last year. Okay.
Because Lee Schrager will be watching this, and we do not want to get in trouble.
No, we don't want to get in trouble. Well, actually, I've been following him on Instagram. He's been in Greece and Portugal. So, Lee,
we're so jealous.
But I would actually be running a panel that is about, you know, the future of the kitchen, the storytelling and the marketing in the kitchen. I am truly interested in trying to help and see if we can connect the food bank. In the meantime, if anybody is willing to respond to this call of action, where do they find you? Give us a little bit of a...
They can find us. They can actually email me directly at prezprez@foodbanknyc.org. They can come to our website. They can call us, 212-566-7855. They can get us.
There you go.
I'm on Instagram, foodbankprez.
Or you can ask me.
Everywhere.
Or you can ask me, and I'll bring you there in person.
Yes, because you're going to help me figure out what to do with three ingredients.
Let's be done. Done. Margarita, a pleasure to be with you always. We need more time. You'll be back. We'll do more. And I am committed. You know that. So I'll definitely do more. I know, right? We'll be back very soon with another episode of Future Bites from the Hackensack Media Stage and the OG Podcast Network. Goodbye. I'm Gabriele Corcos. And be well. And feed the hunger. Okay? Bye.